I'm speaking to you today on a Sunday morning. And I'm speaking to you today on a rainy Sunday morning. Both of those facts are invitations to be a little bit slower and a little bit more inward. And that struck me this morning as absolute perfection. When we arrived a few days before the retreat with the information that much of the retreat would be wet weather, I was a little startled and a little bit discomforted, because I knew how much many of you would be anticipating walking and how we would walk up in the sunshine to the sanctuary and how you would look out that window and you would see, you know, nothing but vista unfolding. And I had to adjust myself. And what a brilliant gift that was, because so much of the ways in which we lose peace with ourselves is because we have built up a narrative, an expectation. This is how it should be. And then when life delivers itself to us in a slightly different mode, unless we are able to be at least somewhat mindful of what is, then we are going to be rattled or disappointed or even outraged. And there are countless opportunities actually for disappointment, inner conflict and agitation, reactiveness that comes from the negative zone, because some of our reactions, of course, isn't that interesting, from the left, some of our reactions are very heart-filled, yeah? Reactiveness in and of itself is not a complaint about the human condition. Reactiveness that is ill-considered or that brings pain to suffering, we need to pause and think about. So each opportunity that we have to meet what is rather than what the doctor ordered is truly an opportunity. And, you know, without rushing into being a Pollyanna, some of those opportunities will be very unwelcome. Let's be real about that. Not again, we might think. Or much worse. How can I bear this, we might think. How can I bear this is a profound spiritual question. There is so much that we cannot bear when we rely only on the limited wisdom of the ego, the personality self, or cognitive thinking. As skilled as the ego may have become, and sometimes that is actually rather blinding. We might be so impressed by the depth of our own education that we have worked so hard to achieve that we sometimes might miss something else behind. Somebody asked me such a good question yesterday, such a question of frankness and openness. What is mysticism? And when I sat with this last night in my prayers and this morning in my prayers, I really thought it embraces with the greatest good humor and goodwill what is also mysterious. So the grasping mind wants to understand and resists the notion that everything is not explicable. And it's certainly not explicable according to the laws of so-called logic. Yeah? So that's part of what mysticism is. Most of all, it is a joining. Most of all, it is a joining also with what is utterly mysterious and intimate. More than the taste in our own mouths. Remember the teaching yesterday from the Lord Krishna to Arjuna. It is an I-ness in you and a you-ness in I. How do we grasp at that with the linear mind? Well, we don't. But we allow the great gifts of experience, of intuition, of instinct, of imagination, and of empathy to bring us more and more into the heart of the all that is the all. So that question, how can I bear this, becomes a spiritual question. It becomes a nourishing question rather than a question of despair. When we step from the place, and this requires courage, let me say that to you. When we step from the place of, I should know this, I should be ready for this, or the devastating frankness that we sometimes have with ourselves, I can't deal with this, so where will I fly to? And I'll talk about refuges in a minute. Instead of that, we have the possibility of sitting in a different place, of sitting in a different space. How can I bear this alone? And the answer truly is, I probably can't. How can I bear this then with the summoning of my soul's strengths? And even then, it often takes much bearing. But it need not utterly disrupt your peace. It will disrupt your peace, but not utterly. Do you see that? Well, actually, do you feel that? I'm going to try to say exactly the same thing again in a number of ways this morning, because it is probably the most essential thing that I can bring to you. This wisdom, the wisdom of perception, that the way you routinely see things is not the only way those things, events, experiences, tragedies, happinesses, blisses, the all of the all, it is not the only way they can be seen. Again, I'm asking you to remember that exquisite little passage which fell into my hands a day or two ago from Matthew. I haven't got it here, so I just have to remind you that those people who in this parable, and we must read all parables as poetry. So in the parable, the blindness was physical, but of course it's also metaphysical. it is also spiritual. And those people knew enough instinctively to know that wisdom was passing by. They were calling out to wisdom, help me, help me, help me. And wisdom, in the form of Jesus, asked them, what is it that you want? Of course, knowing what they wanted, but we must articulate this for ourselves, which is what prayer is. Articulating it for ourselves, knowing, speaking it. Yeah? All I'm doing at this very moment is articulating it for you, because it is my possibility to do so in this moment. I am speaking it for the wisdom that is in you, because you know this. So there they were, the physically blind, the metaphysically blind, because they belong to our human family. With all their instinct and feeling, they knew wisdom was passing by. Could they be touched by it? Could they be healed by it? So wisdom again asked them, name what you need. You will not always get what you believe you need. And please don't think there's always a reason for it. I don't know that there is always a reason for it. We live in a chaotic universe with massive injustice. The favors are not given out fairly. They are not. We are not born into spiritual or physical poverty because we have somehow deserved it in our previous lives. I strongly resist the temptation to go in that direction. I abhor this notion that some of us deserve to live in comfort and some of us do not. I abhor it. But some of us have a greater opportunity to ask questions. And if we have a greater opportunity to ask questions, let us ask them, because we are asking them on behalf of others whose lives are completely taken up with the absolute essentials of physical survival in ways so hard we cannot imagine it until we witness it. Yeah? So, if we are able to articulate the question, I want to come awake, this is a question that will always be answered, because the waking up is arising from the wisdom within. It is waking up from harnessing, unifying the spiritual power that is your birthright with the mind power that is your physical birthright. In other words, you are using your cognitive skills. You are using your intellectual training. You are using your mindful witnessing in order to bring forward the wisdom of the heart. Yeah? This is what spirituality asks of us. It doesn't just ask us to sit there and say om and think lovely thoughts. We need to sit there and say om and think lovely thoughts, because so many of our thoughts are unlovely. So we need to train ourselves more towards loveliness. We need to train ourselves more towards beauty and appreciation. And I hope that I'll get to that. Please remind me if I don't, that I would want to have some time to speak about the fluency in the languages of appreciation. But having lovely thoughts is also a way of softening and opening the mind and welcoming the openness and spaciousness of consciousness and of conscience. and of conscience. Waking up also wakes up the conscience. Not in a way, oh, I'm an awful person. Oh, I regret, as we do. Oh, my goodness. Oh, we do. Oh, we do. But we can allow those regrets, those stupidities, as Thomas Merton called them, also to be softened by our knowledge that they are part of the bigger picture of who we are, and that if we take that one bit seriously, we will have the courage not to fly from them, not to deny them, not to project them onto other people and then feel disgust towards the other rather than towards ourselves, all of which we know how to do, but rather that we would let them take their place in the gradual informing of who we are. In the gradual knowing, I have some difficulty with this. I have some impetuosity that rather needs some more thought. That's a very autobiographical moment. I have a lot of impetuosity. And the positive of it, because wherever there's a shadow, there's always a light. The positive of it is that I also have a huge amount of energy. Yeah. So name, thank you so much, Hilary. I would not give these teachings without Hilary's support. Hilary is holding these teachings. Hilary is holding the months of preparation for these teachings at the deepest levels of prayer and at the deepest levels of discussion. Neither of us knows, I don't know and Hilary doesn't know, what will actually come. We don't know until the moment of it coming. But we can only trust that because of the holding. And I say that to you because you can also hold your own becoming in those very, very trusting ways. So I just want to return to this notion of regret, because it is so often regret that again disrupts our peace with ourselves. And rather than the conscience, the usual conscience effort of thinking, what can I learn from whatever it is that I regret, I want to, in this very moment, bring forward rather more your creativity, which I've really been calling to as much as I can over these days that we've already spent together. So, for example, anger. Anger is regarded by the Buddhists as one of the poisons of the mind. And it is indeed a tremendous poison of the mind because it disrupts other people's peace and it also disrupts our own peace. When it's coupled with self-righteousness, of course, it leads to a severing of all knowledge of your connection with the other. Then the other becomes an object of your rage or your outrage, rather than themselves a subject. Yeah? So I understand completely why anger is something that we need to look at very honestly, both within ourselves and as it's used as a tool politically and socially to divide and to justify division. Yeah? Anger. It's a kind of flame. Okay, so if we were to think about this creatively, we can also think that there is in this fire a passion, a longing to see, yes, something is wrong. That's what provokes anger. Something is wrong. But instead of anger, is it possible I could feel the fire and transform it into a passion for healing? Within myself. You know, I think we have examples in all the great teachers of moments of outrage, of strong expression. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when it becomes a way of life. When it becomes a way of life, it lets in very little beauty, and it lets in very little tenderness, and it lets in very, very little appreciation. Why? Because there is something in the way that the human mind works. It's really interesting. There are, in every day, countless stimuli. Even in a quiet day, countless things we could notice. But we follow familiar tracks in what we notice, partly because of the way that those tracks and where they take us are provoking an emotional response in us, but partly also because we've allowed ourselves to follow those same tracks over and over again. And because we live in a culture of complaint, very often, and a culture of criticism, I mean, you can apparently have an entire career built on something called the critic. Especially if you're writing about other people's writing. Or other people's music. So we live in a culture of complaint, and we are also affected by that. We live in a culture of criticism, and we are affected by it. But we also become somewhat adept at it. Yeah? So naturally, we notice what isn't quite right, particularly in ourselves. Particularly in ourselves. Or we fail to notice anything that's wrong in ourselves whatsoever, and it's always out there. And that is the most powerless position of all. When everything that is wrong everywhere is always outside yourself, then quite a considerable amount of waking up is needed. Because you then become a source of suffering to others and to yourself that you will feel helpless to do anything about. Why will you feel helpless to do anything about it? Because it isn't your fault. This is a circle and a cycle that has become very, very familiar. Very, very familiar. And in many ways, it suits the culture of this time. Because the more empowered people feel, the more engaged they will be, frankly. So I want you to feel very, very empowered and very, very engaged, that all your consciousness and conscience wakes you up, so that when, for example, you feel the fire of anger or the smoldering of bitterness or the ashes of resentment. Actually, with ashes of resentment, you taste it in your mouth. You taste, isn't it aloe? Is the bitterness? All of our senses are aroused by both the, what we would call the negative poles of power, and our senses are also arousable at the more positive spectrum of power. Yeah? So I'm going to go back again to anger and bitterness and resentment. So when we are woken up through our senses by these experiences, we can pause. Again, this is a sacred practice. This is the practice of consciousness. This is the practice of conscience. I wrote so much about it in Forgiveness and Other Acts of Love. I called it restraint. Yeah. I called it restraint. It is not to be confused with constraint, which restricts our freedom. On the contrary, restraint is the gift of freedom. So much rubbish is talked about freedom. Freedom is actually the awareness that you have the possibility of choosing to act with good will. I've written about this again and again and again. It is our absolute freedom to act with goodwill. And please may I be presumptuous enough to think that whatever your reasons for coming on retreat, whatever my reasons for coming on retreat, are because we want to know how to act more freely with goodwill in order to play our part in Tikkun Olam, which is from the ancient Hebrew perspective, from the Judaic perspective, that each of us comes in to play our part in the healing of the world. I can't play your part. I can't play your part. Whoever you are, I can't play your part. And you can't play mine. But we can cooperate so that we can support one another, encourage one another, inspire one another. And we can also appreciate one another's efforts. How vital that is. How vital that is. And may I say to you with all honesty that no matter how old we are, and I can say this with some advantage now because I'm getting older and older, but funnily enough, so are you. Every one of you. You're all getting older and older. However young you are, you're older than you were yesterday. So as we get older and older, we can also see how precious these moments of appreciation are as we grow into our part of playing in the world, of playing our part in the healing of the world. So again, I want to come back to conscience and consciousness. When we have a moment of awakening, our peace is disturbed. The bell has rung. We have been made very uncomfortable by our own or someone else's negativity. Yeah? The moment of pause. On my public Facebook page, I often write about the pause. And it's hard for those of us who are impetuous. But sometimes those who are very kind of low-key are caught out also because they stay in low-key. Rather than rising. We need to inhabit all the keys. Yeah? So rising is also important. But how do we rise is the spiritual question. How do we arise? Yes, we fall. Yes, we rise. How do we arise? Do we arise just a tiny little bit more awake? Just a tiny little bit more aware of our freedom to choose and just a tiny little bit more practiced in freedom? That's our salvation. Here is a poem. There is always a poem. This poem speaks of far-off lands. And in this context, the far-off lands are places that we are drawn to visit, but feel the impossibilities of visiting. For example, the moments in which we say, it's all right for her, or it's all right for the Dalai Lama. Yeah? The Dalai Lama surely lives in a far-off land of consciousness and awakeness. How could I, in my mundane, everyday life, how could I visit such a land? Yeah? That's a far-off land. That's even a kind of nirvana. You know? Remember, His Holiness, with all His busy agenda, spends at least 3 hours a day in the land closest of all, which is the land of meditation practice. This is from Mary de la Valette. Not Mary Oliver, Mary de la Valette. And it's also in Heaven on Earth. I do not have to go to sacred places in far off lands. The ground I stand on is holy. Here, in this little garden I tend, my pilgrimage ends. The wild honeybees, the hummingbird moths, the flickering fireflies at dusk are a microcosm of the universe. Each seed that grows, each spade of soil is full of miracles. And I toil and sweat and watch and wonder. And I'm full of love. Living in place, in this place, for truth and beauty dwell here. How will I bear this? I want to remind you again, this is a profound question. You bring it to your heart. Truth and beauty dwell here. It doesn't mean easy answers dwell here. It doesn't mean that banalities will always comfort. They will not. Sometimes we have to extend ourselves a little bit further, not least in patience. But we bring to that a willingness to be free. A willingness to be free from habits that have not served us well. A willingness to be free of narratives, inner stories that are no longer serving us well. A willingness to be free from the delusion of our own limitations. A willingness to embrace the courage to say, here I am. And finally, and not finally, a willingness to know I am not alone. I am not alone. I am not alone. I am not alone. Truly, that has been my savior in despair. Om Shanti.